George Bartenev has enjoyed a long and distinguished career as an actor and producer in New York. Now he can add playwright to his credits. Bartenev has crafted a one-man play from the wartime diaries of Victor Klemperer, a Berlin Jew who survived life in the Third Reich in a so-called mixed marriage. His wife was Christian. George Bartenev calls his show I Will Bear Witness. When he brought it to Madison, he came into our studio to perform a bit and to talk with Steve Paulson. In this scene, the Nazis have just begun their rise to power.
It is a disgrace, which gets worse with every day that passes. And there's not a sound from anyone. And everyone's keeping their head down. Jury, most of all, and their democratic press. 1 week after Hitler's appointment as head of the coalition, we were at the Blumenfelds with Raab. Raab, busybody, political economist, chairman of the Humboldt Club, made a big speech and said it was necessary to vote for the German Nationals so as to strengthen the right wing of the coalition. I vehemently took issue with him.
Now, one of the oddities, I suppose, of Victor Klemperer's story is that he lived in Germany throughout all of the years of the Third Reich, even though he was Jewish.
Yeah, he stayed. And, you know, the story of the mixed marriages in Germany was really unknown until his diary was published. It was a very delicate issue because some of the children were in the army.
But at a certain point, he was required to wear the yellow star show that he was
A
Jew.
Oh, yes. There were Jews who actually weren't forced to wear the star because they had Christian children and they were in a mixed marriage. He says at one point, there are 300 Jews left in Dresden, 130 of whom wear the star. These kinds of things are completely, you know, unknown until this diary.
Now, the story is fascinating in many respects. For one thing, Klemperer considered himself a good German.
Oh, yeah, he had a Purple Heart, you know, from the First World War. He volunteered to go into the army, like many German Jews volunteered patriotically to go into the army. So he was quite passionate about his German identity. I mean, he was born in Germany. He was raised as a German, and he was quite a passionate liberal German. And so for him, it was, you know, it was almost a nervous breakdown when Hitler got in.
But then once Hitler came in, it was quite clear early on that Jews were being persecuted.
Oh, yes. And then he started to realize that he too was a Jew and then started this really interesting inner struggle with his own Jewishness because he had totally denied it and he did not grow up, you know, going to synagogue or anything. So he had to struggle with it.
Now, he records in intimate detail the daily life of what it was like to live in Germany during the Nazi years, and it must have been a tremendous risk to keep this diary. If it had been found, he certainly would have been killed.
It was absolutely incredible that this diary was not found. And here's something else. Once a week, his wife would take the pages to another woman who was a very close friend. She was a communist, okay? So, you know, this story is also a story of how many Germans actually protected German Jews and performed little acts of heroism and resistance and kindness, you know, on all levels.
Now, Victor Klemperer himself was in danger at several moments during these years. And
oh, yeah. His wife, who started out 1933 very hysterical, and he thought she was going to have a serious nervous breakdown, she really became cooler and cooler, and she turned into this amazing heroine and saved him, like, several times just because she became totally calm and cool under fire.
Tell me about one of those times when she saved.
Well, one of those times was there used to be these Gestapo would terrorize these couples, these in the mixed marriages, by having house searches in which they would destroy everything and would call the wife a Jewish whore. And one of these times she was out shopping and she came home in the middle of the house search. They had just discovered this book that he was reading because he was trying to study what was it that caused the rise of National Socialism in the country. And he was reading this book of Nazi ideology to find out. And when they came in, they found this book, and they were beating him with the book. And she came in at that moment, and she said, wait a moment. I borrowed that book. I'm interested in your approach. I'm writing about it to my cousin, the mayor of Potsdam, Arno Rauscher. And, of course, they flipped, but they didn't attack her. And, in fact, that became the cue for them to leave. And later she said, you know, these beasts are cowards.
There was another moment, I think it was in the early 40s, when Victor Klemperer was rounded up and interrogated. And there's a scene from your play about
Yes, it's in the second part. It's the beginning of 1942 in January.
Could you do that for us?
Sure.
January 12th, 1942. It was such a shock that I was incapable of writing it down until today. I am returning from shopping at Chemnitzerplatz on the front platform of the number 16 tram. At the county court, people crowding on as usual. Just before the station, a young man turns towards me, very clean-cut face, cold, gray eyes, and says quietly, "Get off at the next stop." I'm waiting for the number 14. Then he's standing beside me. "Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Come with me."
As we are walking, he says, "State police, do you want to see my ID?" "And not here.
Opposite the station, where I used to park. A big office building between the hotels. So this is the Gestapo building about which so many terrible stories are told." My dog catcher says to a comrade coming towards him, "He's wandering around on the tram during rush hour. I want to frisk him." To me, by the by, without shouting, "You wait here, behind the stairway." I stood there for a few minutes, very short of breath all the time, thinking, when will they let you go? Someone who was passing bawled at me, "Turn around!" The wall. My dog catcher reappeared after a while and beckoned me to come up. Upstairs, a very large office. One can look into another room, a kind of living room with a table laid. He looks through my briefcase, my purse. "What are you doing?"
I am... writing a book."
"But you'll never be able to publish it. From tomorrow you'll have work to do. Gehle Platt, Zeiss Econ Factory. Do you have problems with your heart?"
I was probably very pale, gasping for breath. "May I go now?" He came with me as far as the stairs, and his first words were,
"And if you weren't so old and decrepit, you'd be put to work."
Only when I was outside did I notice how much my chest and my left arm hurt. Still, I was free, as it is called here. I have still not completely recovered. Since then, I have taken very few steps in the open air, have not left this area, and shall not leave it again. The business of their fabulous tyranny, brutality, humiliation, brutality has taken hold of me far too much. Since then, I've no longer been able to get rid of the thoughts of death. Only consolation: the reversal in Russia can no longer be disguised. But I cannot wait much longer.
Your own history bears some similarity to the story of Victor Klemperer. You were born in Berlin, lived the early years of your life in Germany before moving to the U.S. in, I think, was it 1939?
Yes, just 2 weeks before the war. Came on literally the last German ocean liner.
So you remember that? I mean, even though you were very young.
Oh, no, I have very vivid memories. I was lucky enough to go to a Rudolf Steiner school in Bavaria, and I was in kindergarten, and in the spring of 39, we were all ordered out on the road because the brown shirts were going to march in. So it was my first parade, and the headmaster was this extraordinary man that we all, like, kind of revered and looked up to. And when they passed, he refused to salute.
Do you know if he survived the war?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And I went to visit him because in 1951, I went to England to study at the Royal Academy. And just before I started, I went to Germany to visit the relatives who saved my life. And one of them was my great aunt, who came with my brother and I to the ship. And when the Gestapo opened up our passports, they said, "Oh, isn't this a Jewish name?" And my aunt, who had a great sense of humor, suddenly exploded in this tirade. I mean, she just went bananas, and I'd never seen her raise her voice, right? And she suddenly made this incredible scene. "How dare you, you know, say such a thing, you know, you've lived here 1,000 years, you know." And she went on and on, and he was so shocked that he just said, "Oh, beg your pardon." And he was totally, you know, when you out-Nazi a Nazi, you know, it's always the best way to get out, you know. She was the kind of woman you brought when you knew there was be trouble, you know, because she was incredibly fast in her mind, you know.
But if she hadn't done that, you would have died.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, you have performed this play based on Victor Klemperer's diaries, I Will Bear Witness, all over the world. I mean, in the United States, in Europe.
In England and London and in 8 cities. I've been to Germany 3 times now.
Performing this
yes,
in
performing.
Germany?
Yes, performing. Yes.
What kind of reactions have you gotten there?
Well, every imaginable one. I mean, the Germans are still and will go on processing this tremendous burden for a long time. And you have every sort of version of that processing when you meet people. It's been extraordinary because, you know, in Germany, I was there 2 weeks before the war started in Iraq. And the Germans were absolutely horrified that we were going to war. And every TV station was obsessed with this. I mean, they even interviewed children in school. So the trauma of that thing, you know, is clearly always there and it informs everything.
Did you get any negative reactions?
In London, a woman in the front row, and I noticed her throughout the performance because she had her umbrella. There was something threatening about it. And at the end of the show, we had this really lively discussion, and suddenly she said, "He was a traitor." I said, "What?" I said, "A traitor to what?" She said, "A traitor to his race." I was so shocked, but I said, "You know, that's exactly, you're quoting the Nazis who persecuted them and said the same thing to his wife." The exact same words were said to his wife. But this woman felt that because he had such a feeling about Germany and had this ambivalence, and he did, and many times he fell into great despair, even about his own naivete. But nevertheless, she saw it only in black and white, and she said, no, I can't accept it, you know.
So basically, she was saying that if he had really embraced being Jewish,
yes,
he should have died.
Well, even if he had just embraced being Jewish, you know, for her, that was that he wanted, and that's one of the things that he expresses in part two very much. He says, you know, "I want to help rebuild things here."
Could you leave us with one more excerpt from your play, maybe from later on?
They're on the run towards a village in Bavaria where they hide out. Sunday morning, just after 7, downstairs. Have we not continually experienced since 1914, and even more since 1933, and with ever great frequency in recent weeks, the most utterly improbably, the most monstrously fantastic things? Has not what was formerly completely unimaginable to us become commonplace and a matter of course? It is not only the word impossible that has gone out of meaning. Unimaginable also has no validity anymore.
George Bartenev is the writer and star of the play I Will Bear Witness. It's based on the diary of Victor Klemperer. Steve Paulson spoke with him.